I was a commissioned Australian Defence Force officer, did two tours of Afghanistan. I had the highest security clearance possible. What this government and its predecessors call government secrets are really embarrassing facts proving cover-ups, embezzlement, and war crimes. And this week's opening quote comes from David McBride. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. And it's nice to be back, folks. I am now back in Australia. I arrived home a couple of days ago. Still a little jet-lagged, a little bit the worse for wear from travelling. It really does seem to get to me these days, folks. I'm kind of too old to do this stuff too much more. But it is good to be home. It is nice to be back in the Australian climate, to be sleeping in my own bed. Unfortunately, my computer isn't working, though. I've got home and my machine at home here. I've turned it on, and all it will do is keep restarting. So I had to take that in and get that looked at, find out what it is. Must be some sort of hardware problem. And I'm still talking to you on my little laptop that I took away on tour with me, and I can't access any of the information or material that I have on my big machine. So interesting stuff. And of course, this means, again, I am not going to be able to construct a slideshow for this week's show for those people watching this on YouTube. So you're going to get landscapes and scenery again, ladies and gentlemen. That's just the way it goes. Interesting stuff, interesting little obstacles that life throws at us, ladies and gentlemen. And, well, Australia has certainly gone downhill in the last 5 or 6 weeks since I've been away, ladies and gentlemen. It always happens when I go overseas, I come back, and the government has gotten further out of control, more out of control than what it was, if you even believed that to be possible. Well, what they've managed to do while I've been away is they've got the cash ban through, the $10,000 cash limit that they are pushing through, so they can attempt to lock people further into this corrupt banking system. And they are further merging the government with Big Pharma as well. The Australian government really has taken corruption to an entirely new level, and the people of Apathralia don't really seem to care much about it. They raised a Chinese flag at the front of the Victorian police station the other day. In Hong Kong, we see people protesting at the raising of a Chinese flag and wanting to push China out of their country. In Australia, when they raise a Chinese flag in front of the Victorian police station, all the locals turned out to cheer on the occasion. Amazing mentality that we have in this country, folks. As I said, Apathralia. It really is a good name for this place. Something else that they're really pushing here is the new class warfare card, the card that they want to give to Centrelink recipients, which will limit their purchasing power. This is a card that you can only use at certain stores. So, of course, if you're someone who's poor and you, with this card, you won't be able to shop at op shops, you won't be able to shop at second-hand stores, markets, garage sales, any of the stuff that the poor people go to get cheap food and cheap clothes and cheap items, you're not going to be able to use this card to buy any of that stuff. You can only shop at certain stores. And, of course, the money that you're given from Centrelink for welfare will be all tied up in the card. You get very little cash to spend. And this is being done, they say, to stop poor people spending their money on drugs and alcohol. What it is really doing, though, folks, is creating a situation where people can be squeezed out of society and discarded. Digital starvation of the poor is what it's really about. There was a report that I read the other day of a man who was locked out of his Centrelink payments for 2 weeks for failing to show up to a phone interview. Like, he missed a phone call, and so they cut his payments off, and the only appeal he could make was through this multiple choices, multiple answers. Digital appeal. There's no one you can actually speak to. It's all done by algorithms, and it is this way of digitally locking people out of the system and basically starving them. You know, to take someone's money away from them and leave them 2 weeks before they can buy any food or anything, what you do is you put this person, force this person into a situation where the only option they have is to go and commit crime. So then you see the crime rate go up, you see the need for more police, you see the rollout of the police state. So essentially the government's Centrelink card is designed to not only starve people, but also to increase the crime rate. So the Australian government is deliberately going out of its way to further the class divide, get people right on the edge of the poverty line and force them into poverty. and in the process, by a matter of course, to raise the crime rate and to manufacture situations where people are forced into committing crime. I mean, honestly, folks, if there was any doubt that the Prime Minister of Australia, Scott Morrison, is a sociopathic dipshit who does not give a damn about the people of this country, then this class warfare card should have removed all doubt from people's minds that Scott Morrison is in fact a sociopathic dipshit. He is a guy who should not be running a country. Indeed, all of the politicians in this country should be in jail, folks, if their track record is anything to go by. And honestly, I mean, all you've really got to do, folks, is look at the way the politicians in this country are still pushing for the rollout of 5G and look at the cannabis laws in this country. And that should give you a pretty good indication of the moral fibre and the moral stance of the politicians in this country. I mean, you can use cannabis to judge the moral standing of any world government, folks. You really can. I mean, cannabis is a plant that heals just about anything. Heals cancer, heals all sorts of diseases. It's the only plant that we have an endocrine system in our body for. It is our companion plant. And the outlawing of this plant is a crime against humanity. So it's a really good way of judging any government. Any government that supports the prohibition of cannabis is a government of criminal dipshits who don't give a damn about people. They are anti-life, anti-human, anti-moral, anti-everything. And they should not be in your government. They should not be in a position where they're controlling the lives of other people. It's really a good rule of thumb to be able to judge any government by, folks. The stance on its prohibition of cannabis, mankind's companion plant. And it is, folks. It's our companion plant. It completely heals cancer. But of course, the government doesn't want to heal cancer. The government wants to cure cancer. And it's an interesting play on words. Don't you think? Everyone's always asked to donate money to find the cure for cancer. But what do you do when you cure something? What do you do when you cure fish? What do you do when you cure leather? What do you do when you cure wood or cure wine? What do you do when you cure weed? What do you do when you cure anything, folks? You bring it to its most usable form. You bring it to its most powerful form. You bring it to be the best of what it can possibly be. That's what you do when you cure something. That's what they're trying to do with cancer, folks, is they're attempting to cure it, to make it into the most powerful killing entity that they can. I would suggest that's what they're doing anyway, because cancer is actually the most healable disease on earth, but it is unfortunately also the most profitable disease on earth, which hasn't worked out very well for humankind, because Big Pharma makes so much money out of attempting to find the cure for cancer, when really they could simply heal it, and then they wouldn't have to cure it, would they? And that's the thing with cannabis, folks. It heals cancer. I've healed skin cancer in 3 weeks. I've healed skin cancer on myself in 3 weeks. I've healed stomach cancer, throat cancer, testicular cancer, bowel cancer, all types of cancers. People that have been given 3 months to live have come to me, and I've healed them using cannabis, and that is one of the reasons it's outlawed. And that is, as I said, it's a really good rule of thumb for judging the moral fibre of your government. If there's any question at all about the legality of cannabis in your country, then you've got a bunch of criminals running your country, folks, and it's time you routed them out and replaced them with people who have some form of moral fibre and some form of humanity in their being. And trust me, folks, this does not include anyone who supports the prohibition of cannabis. People who support the prohibition of cannabis, they're either criminals themselves or they're simply too stupid and too uninformed to be in a position where they're in control of other people's lives. I mean, really, it's as simple as that. And you might think, well, look, you know, that's a bit of an extremist attitude to have to just make a blanket statement like that and say that any politician who supports the prohibition of cannabis is either a criminal or too stupid to be in office. And, well, you know, I make the statement because it's true. Why compromise on it? It's a plant that heals almost everything. So why compromise on it? Why beat around the bush? Why say, oh, yeah, look, I can respect the Indonesian government and the government of Dubai because they're doing this and they're doing that. If they continue to support the prohibition of cannabis, they're a bunch of psychopaths, a bunch of criminals who shouldn't be in office to begin with. And why compromise on that, folks? Why pretend it isn't an issue when it is an issue? You know, to me, it's an issue anyway. We've got a plant here that would prevent so much of the disease and illness that we see on Earth, would heal so many of the problems that we face on this Earth today. Now, not only medical problems with people, but also environmental problems, industrial problems. Some of the most pollutive industries on earth would be put out of business instantly if this plant was legal. And yet there are governments that continue to push for its prohibition and want to have studies and do these little essays and little tests and little this and little that. And look, no, we don't need your studies. We don't need any government-approved guidelines. We don't need any government studies about it at all. We've already done the studies ourselves. We know that it heals almost anything and that it was banned under false pretenses to begin with. So what is there to debate? It's really simple, folks. It's really simple. And like I said, why compromise? It's simply the truth. So why not call it? Why beat around the bush? You know, it's a really frustrating thing, actually, you know, seeing how easily cancer can be healed and seeing people being too scared to do it, you know, too scared to make the oil and to apply it and to heal the cancer because it's illegal to do so. Well, look, you know, if the government's telling you that it's illegal to heal yourself of a terminal disease like cancer, I would suggest that you just tell the government to go take a running jump and you do it anyway. Screw what the government says, screw the politicians and screw the government. That's just what you should do, folks. I mean, what right does government have to tell you that you can't heal yourself of a terminal disease? You must let yourself die because we wrote down on a piece of paper here that you're not allowed to use this plant to heal yourself when we know it's perfectly possible for you to do so. No, folks, don't go by that. Just say, listen, I think you should go grow a working brain and go stick your head in a box somewhere and I'm going to go and heal myself anyway. Have a nice day. Thanks for your message, but don't call again. But of course the government, the Australian government, is not interested in healing diseases. They're interested in compromising people's immune systems. We saw this with the previous Prime Minister we had here, Malcolm Turnbull, who introduced the law to make vaccines mandatory, the no jab, no pay initiative that they introduced, again, targeting the poor people to compromise the immune systems of poor people. This was designed to force people on Centrelink payments or on welfare payments to go and get their children immunized and vaccinated, and if they didn't, then they would reduce their payments again. So they used the threat of starvation. If you don't do what we say, then we're going to starve you until you do, because we care about your children, of course. This is the reason, the logic behind it. Amazing how they pull that off. And this was about compromising people's immune systems. And of course they did it because Malcolm Turnbull's wife is a major shareholder in Big Pharma and in the companies that were implementing these vaccine operations. So the previous Prime Minister and his wife made an enormous amount of money out of the vaccine initiative. And again, also paved the way to destroy young immune systems while they're still developing and ensure that people are enslaved to Big Pharma for the rest of their lives. All part of the same process, folks, all part of the people farm that we live on and ways of using human beings for profit so that the rich can keep running off to the bank and the class divide can be widened even further. I said years ago that what they're attempting to do is squash the middle class out of existence. You can see how they're doing this now with these Centrelink cards and with this $10,000 cash ban, everything they're doing, folks. They want the class divide to be very real, very apparent. They want two classes, the ruling class and the workers, and nothing in between except for the terminally stupid police who are used to keep the workers in line, not knowing that they're really just cannon fodder. I mean, they're nothing that the elite actually care about anyway. And the police and the lower-level politicians are all going to get discarded along with everybody else. And this is one of the reasons why we're seeing a little bit of a pushback, actually, from state governments regarding some of the legislation that's rolling out as well. Because a lot of the state governments are realizing that the whole 5G Internet of Things, this whole smart society that is being introduced, is going to actually see the end of state governments. They're not going to be needed to be there. All you're going to need to have is federal government and local councils. And we're also seeing a lot of the banking institutions sort of freaking out a little bit as well because they're realizing that the bankers aren't going to be there either. The banking system is being discarded. It's all going to move over into this cryptocurrency system that the IoT is going to run from. And again, this is because people didn't seize the opportunity the cryptocurrency provided when it first was introduced, which was a way of circumventing the banking system. And what the government did was it put all this doubt in people's minds, and people started using it as a means of investment and looking at the crypto world as some sort of a stock market and not seeing the opportunity it was providing for them, which gave the government the necessary window it needed to be able to construct the Internet of Things, which is the umbrella that's going to be used to control that digital currency world. And now all they have to do is introduce their own cryptocurrency, and that's the way it's going to go. But that's the thing, you know, like we've been saying for years, we've been appealing to these lower level politicians and bankers and people who are being used to control and corral the rest of the people. We've been trying to say to them, hey, listen, you don't matter either. They don't care about you. You're going to be discarded with everybody else. So why don't you join us? And they've been sort of looking at us thinking, oh, no, we're just useless hippies and they should stay away from us. And now we're seeing that these people are being discarded. The whole system is being constructed in such a manner that, as I said, soon you won't need state governments. They won't need to be there. All these state-level politicians will be out of work. All these banksters will be out of work. All the people that were used to control and lead mankind into this smart grid are now all about to be discarded themselves. And they're going to have to join the rank and file with the rest of humanity. And they're going to be given little cards and little microchips and little digital locks on their doors. And all their information is going to be put on the cloud. And they're just going to be a little pleb like everybody else, because that reality of perceived status that they had is no longer going to be beneficial for the system. And so that little status that they had, that little place they were, is no longer going to exist. So they're not going to be needed. So they just become like everybody else at that point, because they're not one of the ones at the very, very top, because ultimately there are very, very few people who are running this system, and everybody below them is simply not part of the equation. You know, if you're not part of those families and you're not part of that bloodline and you're not part of these people who are actually running things at the very top, then you don't matter. It's as simple as that. It doesn't matter what your position is. You may think you matter for the moment, and they may be giving you lots of financial handouts and all sorts of stuff. When it all becomes digital, it doesn't matter what they give you. It doesn't matter how many handouts that they've given you. It doesn't matter what you've got in your digital bank account or crypto wallet or whatever. When your purchasing power is limited by your political perspective, then you better do what you're told, and you better say what you're supposed to say, and you better be at the places you're supposed to be when you're told to be there. Otherwise, you'll be locked out of the system, and you will simply be discarded with everybody else. And it won't matter who you know, it won't matter who your connections are, it won't matter what your job was, or whether you're rubbing shoulders with the right people or not, because it won't be any person that is locking you out of the system. It will simply be done by an algorithm because you missed a phone call or whatever. That's the thing, folks. And if that happens, your only appeal process, there won't be anybody you can call. Like I said, it won't matter who you know. Your only appeal process will be to go through the digital exchange, to do the seek help by numbers program that they put in place for you. And any mistake that you make during that process will simply lock you out of the system further and further until you're thrown on the pile with everybody else. That's the system that they're putting in place, folks, and that's where we're going, and it's happening because people are participating in it. You know, as I've said so often, it's happening because people are using this smart technology all the time. They're using these digital transactions all the time. They're taking these phones with them everywhere. They're allowing themselves to be tracked in everything they do, and they're shopping digitally. That is the most important part about it, is they are spending digital currency. You know, they're shopping with a credit card. They're shopping with plastic rather than with actual money. And if people do not go back to using cash and get away from these smart devices that they spend so much time on, then it's not any point even attempting to build a better future or to find a new way or to construct a better system. Because if people aren't prepared to look after themselves and take responsibility for themselves, then it's not going to matter. I mean, you know, and all of this smart tech, I mean, sure, you can still watch YouTube, you can still do all the social media stuff, you can still do all the things you're doing with this tech, but don't do shopping on it. Don't do all of your economic stuff on it. Don't do all your transactions on it. Use cash for every transaction that you do, folks. Don't use digital scans on your phone to enter aircraft. Get boarding passes. You know, don't do any of this stuff. This is the control grid. This is what they're leading you into. There's plenty of stuff we can do with technology that's great, not a problem. But it is all the economic stuff. That is how they're getting you. And once they've got you into that world, it's going to be virtually impossible to escape from. And that's the situation. That's the problem. And like I said, we've just seen people being discarded by algorithms. You know, once you get into that world, that's the thing. You know, you make a mistake, miss a phone call, whatever. Then suddenly you're locked out of your payments. You're locked out of your bank. You're locked out of this. You're locked out of that. Anybody who travels a lot now knows just how easily you can get locked out of your email, locked out of all of the stuff that you do online simply because you're in a different location. And if you haven't got it all hooked up to your smartphone, then you're going to get locked out. That's what they're doing, folks. They're forcing you to carry this smartphone everywhere. Why? Because they want you to have that surveillance device. That's the thing. And it's because you're using this device to do all these economic things and all these real-world activities that you don't actually need the device for. You could do them without the device. You know, so it's finding that balance. It's finding the way of using it for connection and entertainment and all the things we want to use it for, but not allowing it to be something that dominates our lives and something that dominates our financial world, our economic world. As soon as we allow that to happen, we're lost. That's the important thing that people need to look at. And it is so important that people look at this, folks. It really is. You know, I've been suggesting to people that they throw away their smartphones for years. It's become very apparent to me, very obvious to me, that they're not going to do it. You know, even when I suggest it to people now, they say, well, Max, I couldn't watch your clips on YouTube if I didn't have a smartphone. And okay, I can appreciate that that's the world that we've been moved into, where people are just going to be using these things. But it's the economic system that is the problem. It's because you're not just using your phone for connection and entertainment and all this other stuff, like I said, it's because you're using it for economics as well. Now, if you get away from that, then you've really gone a long way to circumventing the control grid, because that is how they're going to get you. You know, they're moving you onto these devices that are smaller and smaller and smaller, so you know, you're not even having hard drives in your computers anymore. Everything is on the cloud. But that means it doesn't exist. It's not in your possession anymore. It means you can be locked out of it. It means someone else is in control of your information, in control of your data, in control of your virtual stuff. It's not there on your machine now. It's on the cloud. And if you move location, change around, do whatever, do anything the government doesn't like, then they can lock you out of all of your stuff. That's the problem. And it's because we're allowing it to be put on the cloud, and also we're allowing the phone and the smart system to function in our economic lives and to control our economic lives. That's the problem. You know, if we stop using it for any economics, stop using it for any financial transactions, don't do banking on your phone, don't shop using your phone, you know, by scanning QR codes to enter shops and going into shops that are cashless, don't participate in cashless shopping. You know, if people refuse to participate in cashless shopping, then they can't lead us into this smart grid, this control grid, this dystopian future whereby you're ruled by social crediting and your purchasing power is limited by social crediting. They can't do any of it if you refuse to use digital currency and refuse to shop with digital currency. And that's a simple change that people can make to their lives, folks, and it's really not that inconvenient to go to an ATM and pull cash out and go shopping with that. It's actually a lot more convenient to do it that way. You'll find you spend a lot less time standing in supermarket queues. I mean, I'm always waiting for people to finish their transactions on their cards. It always takes so long. When I'm just standing there with cash in my hand, I can just pay the money, get the change and leave. And yet I've got to stand in line and wait for ages sometimes while people are messing around on their cards, wondering why that account doesn't work, trying a different card, trying a different account, trying this, trying that. All these sorts of problems they run into because they're simply not pulling cash out and using that. And that's actual money they could be using. And that would solve all of the problems, and not only that, it would not leave a paper trail of everything they're doing, and it would not create all of this inconvenience for them. I mean, just how easily they're getting locked out of their cards in supermarkets now because of whatever reason. You know, when the power goes down in a supermarket, the power goes down in a grid somewhere, you go to a shop and they say, oh, we can't sell you anything because We don't have access to the banking system. And I walk in there with cash and they go, oh, well, we can actually serve you and we can even give you change and all sorts of stuff. So I go into these places when there's a blackout and I can still do shopping and people that are using their cards can't. So, you know, for all the conveniences that people believe they're getting by using these devices and by using these cards, really they're not. Really they're creating a very, very inconvenient future for themselves and a future where they can be so easily controlled that it really beggars belief that people would allow themselves to be led into this to begin with. You know, I can only put it down to distraction, the fact that they're kept so busy running on the treadmill that they simply don't notice how much of a control grid this is going to be, and they simply don't notice what a slavery system they're entering into. Now, people believe themselves to be time poor, and so they would prefer to use their card at a queue rather than spend that extra 2 minutes it takes to walk to the ATM and draw the money out. And really, it is that sort of an attitude by which they are leading themselves into their own prison. And it really is a very, very sad thing to witness, but hey, that's the way it's going, and I see it around me almost every day in every country that I go to, everywhere I go. I see people using these devices to do some of the most everyday activity that they used to do themselves and they could still do themselves. And I see the real world activities being further and further limited. Go to supermarkets now and most of the checkouts are cashless. Most of the checkouts are self-serve. Even when you do have normal checkouts there, you'll have a whole bunch of checkouts, 6 or 8 or even 10 checkouts, but there'll only be 1 or 2 that are open. All the rest of it is cashless. They really want to push people into this, and people simply don't realize what a trap it is and what they're being led into. And, you know, if the blinkers can come off and people can really see this, I mean, I keep hoping that one day I'll do this show that you'll be able to play to people and they'll just get it and a penny will drop and the whole world will go, oh my God, I see it now. And we'll change the direction that we're going. I still live in the hope that one day that will happen. Someone will release that one radio show, which will just put it all in a nutshell, and people will get it. You know, what it will take to wake people up, I don't know. But if they don't wake up soon, then we're really going to find ourselves in this smart prison, and people are simply going to wake up one day and wonder how on earth they got there. How on earth did they end up being in this world where they're not able to do anything without being monitored in their actions? They're not allowed to think outside the box or say anything that nobody wants them to say, under threat of punishment, and that punishment will be instant by simply limiting what they can and cannot buy because they allowed themselves to be led into this digital smart reality. It's a freaky thing, folks, but that's what people are going to wake up to one day, and they're simply going to wonder how they got there without noticing it happening. But anyway, folks, I think we have now reached break time, and so I'll leave it there for now, and we're going to have a break. Thank you for joining me on the air today. It's always a pleasure to have your company. I'll be back to speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, so it really is a terribly dystopian future we're being led into, that we're heading into, and it really does get quite tiresome bringing this type of information to people on a radio show as well. I really wish I had something positive to share with you on occasion, and I try to find positive things, but while this smart system is looming, it's very difficult to put any type of silver lining on it. It's simply dystopia, and it is what it is. And in looking for some type of mechanism to find a way out of this future and to heal the human condition, the problem with this as well is that, as I've said so often, people want you to present them with some sort of game plan that they don't really have to participate in themselves. They want you to give them a new model of what the new reality or the new system will look like, but they don't really want to have to change anything they do in their lives to make that happen. They're not really prepared to change their moral compass and to change the way they interact with people on the ground where they live. When were they to do so, the system around them would simply have to change by default. And that is the only way out of the reality that we're heading into, is for people to reconnect with themselves, reconnect with what it means to be human, and thus connect with the people around them. And if people aren't prepared to do that, then what is the future? What game plan can you possibly give people? What system can you possibly offer them that will function if they're not prepared to change the perspective that they have now and change the way they look at things, change the way they operate within the social and economic world? Because that's what will change the system, and nothing else will. As I said, if they were to do that, then the system we've got now would work fine. It would actually be a functional system, you know, because the only thing that's wrong with this system is the fact that we willingly step outside our moral compass and we willingly cooperate with wrong behavior every day of our lives, which is what allows this system to continue along this dystopian path. Were we to stop doing that, the path would have to change. And nothing else will change the path. That's the thing. That's why there is no system that anyone can offer you which everyone will embrace and say, oh yes, this works, because there's no system anyone can offer you that will work, nothing that will ever look good on paper or otherwise, until people are prepared to change their perspective and change how they interact with other people. Stop putting an economic value on their interactions with people in everyday life. Stop putting an economic value on kindness. Stop putting an economic value on the basic necessities of life, food, water, and shelter. You know, these things are not things that should be bought, things that should be sold to people. These are basic necessities of life, which everybody should be entitled to by whatever means they need to get these things. You know, as long as they're not stealing them from other people, well, what's the problem? And, you know, they wouldn't need to steal them from other people were there not an economic value attached to them to begin with. And all attaching an economic value to the basic necessities of life does is provide a system of scarcity and place people in a state of artificial and very much contrived hardship, which they don't need to be in. So it's a pretty simple adjustment of perspective, folks. It's not really a lot to deal with. All you've got to do is put mankind and put human beings above the economic system. Realize that it is life that is important, not economics. Economics does not help life. It does not add any value to life. Economics simply places people in a state of scarcity and is actually very, very damaging to life. It doesn't serve any purpose at all, except in the eyes of those who trade. And trade, again, is only really necessary because economics exists to begin with. It's kind of a catch-22 situation, isn't it? Well, trade in the modern world, anyway. Trade in this current system of economic codependence that we seem to have been had forced upon us without really knowing that it was happening. But you look at all of this, ladies and gentlemen, and as I've said again before, when I look at how many life skills we've lost over just as period of a couple of generations, how the human race has been led into this situation where we've become more and more dependent upon technology for our everyday existence. And I see how it's becoming more and more like that. I mean, it's bad enough for the millennials coming out through the school system now, but what about the kids that are just starting school? The kids are going to be coming out of school within the next 5 to 10 years. These kids are going to be so locked into the system that they're going to have no hope of ever functioning in the real world, should the world change. And this is where I can start looking at things such as what I talked about last week with the possibility of the grand solar minimum happening and what could happen if that comes about. Yeah, and all of this stuff, folks, that I investigate and look at, you know, I'm not saying any of it is true. I'm not saying any of it is a given and this is exactly what's going to happen. I just look at things, I put them on the table, and I consider what I believe needs to be considered. And I present it for your humble consideration. But I look at this, you know, I look at the fact that our history has been changed. I look at how populations have very obviously been culled. You know, really, there's no denying this when you really want to look at it, folks. You know, it is very telling that none of the forests on the earth are older than 200 years except for very small pockets of catalogued trees. It's very telling that we don't have enough population on the earth to warrant the age that we're given for the human race being here. Not if history is to be believed and history is to be accepted in its current academic timeline and everything we're given. None of it makes sense. The population figures don't make sense. The age of the forests don't make sense. The monuments lying all over the earth don't make sense. The fact that there's buildings that are half immersed in mud, you know, what we're calling the mud flood, none of this makes sense. The enormous amount of ruins found beneath the oceans, none of this makes sense. None of it fits in with what we're given. And then you look at stuff such as the orphan trains, the foundlings, the enormous amount of children that were trafficked around the world in the late 1800s. You factor in the reality that there was once this great nation called Tartaria that was expunged from history. So, you know, you've got to step back and look at it and factor in the possibility of these solar minimums being a reality, the possibility that this is what is causing what we're calling the mud flood, and the possibility that at the end of these cycles, technology is filtered out to people. This is where the legends of the scrying mirrors and the sigils and the demonic Lucifer system and all of this stuff comes into play. And during the process of this technological evolution or this technological society being introduced over human consciousness, the human race is removed of their life skills and dumbed down a little bit more for the next cycle. He'd even questioned the Georgia Guidestones, you know, what they're all about, whether that's as high as they want to take the population on the next cycle. But the point is that with the population we've got now, people who do have life skills are now reaching periods where they're getting pretty old, a lot of these people. A lot of the young kids don't have a lot of the life skills that the older generations have got, and if this system suddenly shuts down, there's no way many of these kids are going to survive what the world will be at that point. There's no way a lot of these kids would survive in the real world, and when you look at this, you can't help but think that the human race is being set up. You know, when we get to a situation where we are so dependent upon a system which is run by people who obviously don't care about us, I mean, just look at everything I outlined in the first half of the show. Look at the wars, look at the vaccines, look at the starvation, look at the poverty, look at the whole economic system, look at the fact that cannabis is illegal, all the stuff they've done to us, folks. Now, these people obviously don't care about the human race, and we are allowing ourselves to become completely dependent upon these people and completely dependent upon a system which places economics above the needs of the people. This is a very, very dangerous situation to look at, a very, very dangerous situation to allow ourselves to be led into, irrespective of whether you want to believe in solar minimums or anything like that. Now, even looking at the world the way it is now, just in its basic form, if you even want to take the whole academic system as being correct, if you want to take the whole academic timeline as being correct and even believe the historical narrative as it's given to you, any of that stuff, just look at the world and take it at face value. Even in that situation, allowing ourselves to be led into this situation of complete dependence upon a system which places economics above the needs of the people, it's very dangerous and a very stupid thing for people to be doing. It's simply not a situation we should be allowing ourselves to be led into, no matter how you look at it. So the question is, what is the solution? You know, and again, as I've said before, and it probably sounds lame and probably sounds all airy-fairy and new age, you know, but to say that the way out of this mess is in love and to love each other, to be kind to each other, to help each other, to respect each other. I mean, like I said, you risk sounding all new age. But that's really what the solution is. Yeah, because that's what it means to be human. You know, cooperation with each other. The only things that put us against each other, usually the things that separate us, are, again, economically based for the most part. Now, mostly it's because we're in situations of scarcity where we want to profit from each other or make money from each other or use each other in some way that benefits ourselves because we're kept in a state of scarcity. I mean, you know, a lot of people are like this. It's a real dog-eat-dog society out there, especially the last couple of weeks I spent in LA. I really watched this with people. Now, everybody is so codependent upon everybody else trying to get through when really if they were to simply to cooperate with other people, not be codependent, not try to use other people or profit from other people or get benefits from other people, but simply to cooperate with people, to treat people in like cash, to treat people as themselves, we'd heal the world in a day. As I've said so many times, you know, this really is the way out, because that's what it means to be human, ladies and gentlemen. It's a big part of it anyway. You know, and it's something that I've found always works for me. In whatever situation that I'm in, if I can give to people around me, I'll usually find that those people will give back in some way. I usually find that I'm looked after. You know, if you have a giving nature where you attempt to improve people's lives simply because you're involved in their lives and make the world better for them that day, offer them a smile at least, give them something, you know, as simple as a smile, because that can make all the difference. You know, you'll find that the universe will reflect that back to you. The world will reflect that attitude back to you, and things just kind of work. And it does happen, folks, and I'm a living example of the fact that this is true. Life really is an emotional mirror. You know, I had a reasonably stressed out time on the last tour because I had a few stressful things going on in my mind, and it's interesting how it happened. It's the first time I've gone on tour and I've been away like that, and I've had a bit of stress in my mind, and of course, that's what was reflected back to me on the journey. And it looks like the wildlife agrees with me, folks. It's interesting when you say stuff like that and the birds chime in and say, yeah, you got it right with that one. But yeah, it is. It's an emotional mirror, folks. That's just how it works. That's how reality works. So, you know, if people can see this and people can see just how much cooperation can make a difference, rather than putting any financial value on anything, you know, just cooperating with people and loving people can make so much difference in their lives. You know, that's how to change the world. It may seem an insurmountable problem, you know, this whole system. It may seem so huge and monstrous that you wouldn't think anything as simple as love could change it. But really, if applied correctly, it could. I mean, love is the most powerful thing in the universe, folks. And it is a lack of love which has brought us to this point. And again, I know it sounds kind of weird and lame and new agey, but well, it's worked for me. And I've seen the benefits of the application of this emotion. And were people to do it and stop putting trust in external sources and put trust in the power that exists within their own heart, then I think we could change things very simply. Indeed, we could change the world in a day if people were simply to change their perspective. And again, I've said that so many times, but hey, what do you do, folks? That's the solution. So I just keep coming back to it because, well, that's the solution. You know, and it can get hard sometimes. It can get very difficult, especially if you're on this path of activism, on the path of attempting to make some sort of a difference in the world. It's a very lonely path. It's just the way it is. And you have to deal with that. And it's just part of the territory. But, you know, we come into this world alone and we leave this world alone. And you'll find that in many of the times and trials and tribulations you go through in your life, you end up having to face them alone anyway, because they're usually internal things. You know, when I look back at this year, for example, 2019 has honestly been probably the most difficult year I have faced in a very, very long time, in a good many years. The last 20 or 30 years, I've not faced a year where I've gone through the emotional trials and tribulations and just general difficulties that I've had to go through in 2019. You know, when I got hacked earlier in the year and I lost so much work, you know, and I consoled myself by saying, well, you know, I lost 4.5 years work, 5 years work on the films and sort of leaving it at that. But really, I lost so much more than that. You know, I lost all of the websites I'd ever visited ever since I've been on the internet, all my favorites, all my bookmarks, all of the writings that I, like, so much stuff that I lost. And I had someone steal something from me as well. Something was stolen from my house. Also, the Christchurch shooting happened, and I identified the extra players at Christchurch. I attempted to alert the truth community, and I got massively attacked for that, for not buying into the officially accepted narrative that it was all a hoax and this big smoke screen that had been created around the extra players that were actually identified on the shooter's video. And that caused me to experience a huge loss of confidence in the truth movement, the so-called truth movement, and the ability of the truth movement to ever make a difference at all. Even the want or desire of many major players within the truth community to ever actually want to make a difference and maybe really question the path that I'm on there. I had all sorts of trials and tribulations happen, and during this period I reached out to some of the people that were closest to me in the world that I thought, and in that time when I really needed people to be there, nobody was there, nobody responded, people didn't answer sometimes for weeks on end, and I was left to deal with the entire situation on my own. Because that's what life does, folks, because all of these things that happen to us are simply things that are put there so that we can learn the lessons that we need to learn. And these lessons can only be learnt on your own. You can't learn them from other people. Other people can offer you suggestions. They can offer you possibilities. They can offer you things that may have worked for them and things that have got them through, guidelines maybe that may help you find your path. But ultimately, the path that you're looking for is your path. And no one else can walk that path for you. It's a path that we all must walk ourselves, and it's a path that can only be trodden alone. That's the interesting thing about life. It's a very, very unique and very solo journey, regardless and irrespective of the connections you make along the way, irrespective of the people that you meet and connect with along the way, it's still a path that must be walked alone. And knowing that the path is basically an emotional mirror is a huge benefit along the way. Just knowing that's how it works is hugely beneficial and hugely motivational as well. And that's why you've got to remove stake in the outcome of your actions, folks. You can't allow things to get you down too much when you're facing these trials and tribulations. And some of the stuff that happened to me, the emotional state that I could have gotten into earlier in the year through the trials that I went through. I mean, it could have been a very bad place, but it's an emotional mirror and you've got to remove stake in the outcome. You know, when I got hacked and I lost all that stuff, I just looked at, well, what is the reason for it? What can I learn from this experience? What is life attempting to teach me? And perhaps all it's attempting to teach me is to regain control of my emotional state. Perhaps I'm getting too much of a stake in the outcome of things. So perhaps life needs to do something for me to bring me back to that point where I have nothing else to lose. I have nothing left to lose. I have no stake in the journey. It's simply about the journey. It's simply about the path. Yeah, perhaps that's what it was about. There's always a lesson in all of these things somewhere. It just depends on where we're prepared to look and how much we're prepared to look and how much we're prepared to accept. But yeah, it has been a most interesting year, especially for me. It's been a most interesting year in my personal life, and it's certainly been an interesting year on the world stage as well, just looking where we're going. As I said, it's interesting to see how much Australia has deteriorated in just the 5 or 6 weeks that I was away. It seems to have a habit of doing that, but it's not just Australia. It's the entire world that is deteriorating into this world police state. It's just happening to different degrees in different countries. But what you're seeing happening here in Australia, folks, this is going to be coming to a country near you. I mean, they use these countries as test bases. They use certain countries to test certain agendas, and they see what works in different countries, and then they bring it out across the board, and it works for everybody. That's the way they do it. You know, they use all countries as test cases, and they construct these scenarios which are going to lead all ultimately in the same direction. But Australia is a very, very good example of just how far they are prepared to take things, folks. This country really is deteriorating rapidly, and it's about time the people of this country woke up to the fact that their government is not working for them. Their government has usurped this country, even if you want to look at it in regard to their law and the whole legal system and Westminster and the Crown and all that sort of stuff. Look into the reports that have been put out by Senator Rod Colton, or ex-Senator Rod Colton, where he has exposed the fact that the Australian federal government has in fact stolen Australia from the Crown. This country is no longer actually controlled by the UK. They've done it through very nefarious means in the Parliament, but they've basically stolen the country from the Queen. Not that the Queen really cares about it, because I think it's all fiction anyway. All the money gets filtered to where the money's going to be filtered to anyway, and the whole world is run by the banking system. But at least he has shown you that the government that we're presented with in its current form in Australia is a complete farce. It's a complete crock, and it's illegal even under its own law. So that should be something for people to consider. Again, like I said, folks, not that it's going to really make much difference because the whole system is fiction anyway. But perhaps it's something that would wake up the sleeping masses to the fact that, well, they've been scammed and that this has been done on every possible level imaginable. The question is, even if you alert them to this fact, would they actually even do anything about it? Good old Apothralia. You know, really, a lot can be said for the effectiveness of fluoride, ladies and gentlemen. All you've really got to do is look at the state of this country and look at the response that the government is getting from the people and ask yourself the question, does fluoride really cause people to be docile? Well, in response to that, I give you the people of Australia. But folks, I think we are getting very close to that time again where we have reached the end of the show. A little bit of a convoluted show again for you today. Again, I've just got home, I found my computer is not working, all sorts of problems and all sorts of stuff, and I'm jet-lagged, and so this show is what it is, and I do again apologize for the lack of any relevant viewing material to go with this presentation if you happen to be watching it on YouTube. And I really do apologize for my jet-lagged lack of sleep state, folks. In fact, I wasn't actually going to be bringing you a show this week, but when I looked at the state of this country and I looked at the legislation that this government is introducing, I thought, well, I really can't take the week off. I really need to talk about this stuff because the people of Australia really need to wake up to what is happening, and the world needs to see just what this government is doing and what this smart system is going to be once it gets into place. Now, China's really getting a bit of a foothold in all of our countries, folks, and when you look at the Chinese social crediting system, well, I think this is important. I think it's important that people pay attention to the direction that we're going, because if we don't nip this in the bud before it is completed, then, as I said, it's going to be very, very difficult to extricate ourselves from the system that they're putting in place. But folks, as I said, that is it for me. We've reached the end of the show. As I've mentioned before, I'm going to be speaking at an Acapulco in Mexico in February. This is probably around about the 17th of February. It would be mid-February anyway. It's usually mid-February. If you go to my website, thecrowhouse.com, and you click on the Acapulco banner and use that to purchase your ticket going through that entry point, you'll find you can get yourself a 10% discount on the ticket, and that is quite a substantial saving. And it's a great event, folks. I do recommend you come along to an Acapulco. It goes over a period of 4 or 5 days, and it's always a good event. There's always a lot of good speakers, a lot of good information, and it's just a good atmosphere. It's good to connect with that many like-minded people. You can make a lot of good connections to take back with you into the real world, and that is one of the most beneficial things I find about these conferences, is the connections that people make along the way. So that is something to look forward to, folks, and I'll look forward to seeing you there if you come out onto that. I will very likely be speaking at AV11 as well. That will be in the UK around about May. I haven't heard from Ian Crane yet, but I would imagine that is on the cards. It's very likely I'll be speaking at an event called the Zen Awakening event that is happening in April in the United States as well, and I'll keep you posted on that when more information of that comes to hand. I don't really have any more yet, but I have been informed this event is happening, and I have been asked to speak there, and I'll probably be in the area at the time because I'll be there as a kind of a remnant from Acapulco. As I mentioned last week, I'm also going to attempt to organize some sort of event in LA or near LA sometime around about March or April next year, so I'll keep you posted on that one as well. As usual, I'd like to send out a wonderful thank you to all the people who send me so many kind emails. I am trying to get on top of all these emails, folks. I really do have hundreds of emails here to get through, so please bear with me on this. It does take a long time. And thank you, thank you, thank you to those people who support me on Patreon, because without my Patreon support, I could not do the work that I do. And it's really wonderful for you people to be helping me out the way you do and helping me keep this message going and keep this show on the air. It really is the only thing that keeps me going, folks. So I cannot thank you enough for that. But that is it for me, folks. We've now completely run out of time. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. I should hopefully have my computer fixed by then, and be able to bring you a relevant slideshow if you're watching this on YouTube. But that is it for me now, folks. We've completely run out of time. And as I said, I will look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In luck, Keshe.